This News Talk 1010 podcast is brought to you by PocketEmploymentLawyer.ca. Wrongfully dismissed? Changes made to your job? Lowballed on severance? Find out if you have a case before you call a lawyer. Go to PocketEmploymentLawyer.ca.
And Toronto Mayor John Tory joins us. Mr. Mayor, great to have you back.
Nice to be back. I'd be the guy with the windbreaker. I heard you said I wore a windbreaker on my yacht, and I hasten to add for the audience that I don't have a yacht, even though Ryan claimed I had one. But
you hear everything.
I aspire to have a yacht, but I do not have a yacht, and I'm not sure I even have a windbreaker. I'm not sure I know what it is, but anyway.
Oh, I got to get you a windbreaker. You need a windbreaker.
Undoubtedly. Anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Mayor, let's talk about what's happening at Nathan Phillips Square right now. The trespassing notices. My one question would be, is it the structures? Is it the tents? Is there something that those demonstrators could do to be allowed to stay but avoid getting these trespassing notices?
Well, we're respectful of the fact that they are protesting legitimate issues, and we have a legitimate right to protest in this country. But on the Nathan Phillips Square, as you might expect, there are laws dealing with all kinds of things, including some you mentioned. It is specifically prohibited, for example, to camp in a tent. It is prohibited to have a fire, and so on. So we set out in a letter that, pardon me, is very reasonable to them, and I think we've treated them very respectfully over the time they've been there, that they can't go on, you know, not complying with these laws, and that, in fact, they're going to be soon interfering with other permitted uses of the square that were planned on long time ago, a farmer's market and things like that, that are, you know, legitimate public uses. So we followed the law, and we followed a very respectful course, and now issued a trespass notice, which says we need them to be taking those tents down and removing them by Monday. And so we'll see. I've said all the way along that, you know, I'm quite prepared to see people exercise the right to protest, whether it's in a park or on a Nathan Phillips Square, for a period of time, but not indefinitely. And so I think the time has come, and that's why the notice was served.
Let's get into some of the COVID-related stuff. Obviously, the NHL, it looks likely that Toronto is going to be one of the hub cities. I understand you've had a chance to look at the plan, and you described it as a rather thorough plan. Can you take us through a little bit of what that may look like? I think there's a lot of interest as to, you know, what, in fact, we're in store for here in Toronto.
It changes from day to day because there's been quite a negotiation going on, and of course we haven't been selected as yet. The NHL is going to make that choice, I hope, soon, and I hope they choose us. But, you know, all the way along the objective has been to find a place, you know, first of all a hotel, and let's not forget, unlike the Blue Jays, who are all staying in one hotel attached to the Rogers Centre, we're dealing here with, you know, quite a few hockey teams. The hockey teams are big and they have a lot of equipment people and trainers and all those coaches that have to stay as well, and there was some thought maybe even families would come. So there had to be accommodations found, and then there was the challenge of accommodations in which they could be in a bubble effectively, and then there was the challenge of finding some place where they could even go for a walk outside without sort of breaking the quarantine that would be represented by the hotel accommodation. So all of that's been under discussion, and then you add to that as well the testing, the monitoring, and the sort of hygienic disinfection kinds of routines they would have to go through when they're at the arena and all those kinds of things, even on the buses getting back and forth. So it's been very complicated. It's been under detailed negotiation, and I can only say that I think Toronto's put its best foot forward in great cooperation between the three governments and with Maple Leaf Sports, who are the, you know, the host company, as it were, that would put this thing on.
One big question we got from listeners yesterday, and I, you know, I'd like to maybe you answer it for them more than me, because, you know, I'm a sports fan and I get it. But what's the upside as far as the city is concerned when it comes to hosting this as a hub city?
I think, first of all, you know, when you look at hockey or any of the other sports, there's, you know, worldwide exposure or North American-wide exposure for Toronto, which is always good. You know, when any time a big sports event is on, they always do a little thing about the city that they're in, and that's good. But I think beyond that, it's going to be just the fact that they're going to be, you know, when you add it all up, there'll probably be several hundred hotel rooms, and at a time when no hotel rooms are occupied, no hotel workers are working, I think it's just a small shot in the arm. It's like having a small convention come to town. So I think, you know, those are the two benefits, aside from the fact that our team, the Leafs, would get to play in their home arena, which won't have any fans in it. You know, I think the ultimate irony is going to be they won the Stanley Cup this year with no fans in the stands. All those people that have paid for their tickets for, you know, 40 years, and they'll win the
it
Stanley
count.
Cup. We know in there, and then we'll have a parade, and no one will be allowed to come.
It won't count. It wouldn't count.
Oh, trust me. If we win the Stanley Cup, it's going to count. And if I have to postpone the parade, if I have to stay in office too long beyond my time in order to hold the parade, we'll have a parade. But, you know, because when they win, it's going to be a big deal.
Okay. Okay, let's talk about stage three, if we get there, hopefully. I'm going to the beach right now, practicing physical distancing. But stage three, what would that involve?
Well, it involves really the opening of a lot more things. I guess the biggest single difference should be the reopening of the indoor part of restaurants. And, of course, that is something desperately needed by the restaurants. I mean, all the extra patios, we've given hundreds of them, it's just not going to make them a viable business, that plus the takeout. So we need that to happen. But then, as well, the other things that are covered by it are things like recreational facilities, indoor gym clubs, and all those sort of things that are still closed. And so it'll be, most everything else. Because if you look at it now, in terms of the economy, while there are still a lot of people not coming back down to work, pretty well everything else is open. The stores are open. The movie theaters and concert venues and things I don't think will come in the early part of stage three. I think that's a long way off yet, just because those are crowd scenes. And in case you're not going to ask me about it, I just plead with people, please, about the beaches this weekend. Like, the people are not going, they're going to the beach to cool off, but there are lots of different places to go. They're going because it's a party scene. We've had to stop DJs from setting up with generators on the beach. We stopped, the bylaw officers are polite, and I know Ryan might argue too polite, but they stop people carrying a case of 2-4 onto the beach and say, look, please take that beer back to where it came from, your car or your house or whatever it is, and then you can come back to the beach. And they don't immediately give them a ticket. And most people comply. And if they don't comply, then they get a ticket. But please, just use common sense. I mean, you see these scenes from Florida. You see what's going on down there in terms of the infection. And I don't know why anybody would want to go there. The same with this nightclub. The owners opened it. They'll pay a price for that. But why would anybody want to be there where one person in there out of 150 with COVID-19 and they could spread it to everybody else who could take it home and spread it to their family? We're just getting over this stuff, and we've just got to, just stay the course, please.
Yeah, that was my next question about the Goldie Nightclub, it's called. It was out in King West. We've understood this afternoon they've lost their liquor license. What happens to owners in that situation? Is it harder for them to get a club a second time around if they've violated this type of order?
Very much so, because when you go to get a license, you have to go to a hearing, and at the hearing, people are entitled to intervene, including the local elected officials and the alcohol people themselves. And the first thing they will raise, if you've had infractions of serving underage or, doing this kind of thing, is that you had a bad infraction and lost your license. But, ultimately, Ryan, the biggest penalty that places like this can pay is losing their license, because that's their business. They're closed. I mean, they can have people in to dance, but who's going to go and dance at a place where you can't even get a drink? So,
I think
the biggest price they can pay is to lose their license, and that's been done pending some hearing they're going to have on that as well.
You know, it's interesting.
I'm a bad dancer without a drink.
Yeah, I'm a horrible dancer without a drink. It's just not possible.
I'm a horrible dancer with or without a drink, so actually it doesn't really matter.
It's interesting.
Salsa on St. Clair and Caravana. Thank God both those things. It's the only good reason that they're not happening this year, so I don't have to dance badly in front of large crowds.
Oh, the video still exists. I can tweet that out at any time.
Yeah, thanks for pointing that out. Appreciate that.
it is interesting, though, when you're talking about stage three, because I was on a patio last Saturday, and one of the biggest conversations I overheard were people saying, man, I really hope this stage three comes for restaurants, because what are we going to do? I mean, I don't want to say we're fortunate that this is happening in the summer, but, with patios being what they are, you can have a little outdoor space and have businesses at least still try to make money. If this was happening in October, let's say, we'd have a real problem on our hands.
Well, let's not forget, a lot of restaurants don't have patios at all. They have no ability. That's one of the reasons we created this program, to have patios on the sidewalk and on the street, because there's a lot of places that don't have one. And you're right. They told me, because I toured around to a few last week just to sort of welcome them aboard and open up one of these new ones on the street on Queen Street, and they said, unless they get to the point where they can use 70% of their space, then it's not a viable business. And so, what will happen is they'll only stay open so long, and then they'll eventually close, because they're opening right now to lose money. Even with the patios, they're losing money.
Yeah, it's very true. Something else going on in the background there, but it is our time to say goodbye, so thank you, sir.
Just a phone ringing, that's all, but never mind. And then you folks have a good weekend, and please, people, common sense, stay away from crowded beaches. Go somewhere else if you please can. This will soon be over if we behave ourselves.
There you go. It's a good message. Toronto Mayor John Tory with a great message for you this afternoon here on The Rush. 60 seconds from now, we will come back. We will not have drinks or dancing, but we'll have the roundtable, and that's just good enough, isn't it?
This News Talk 1010 podcast was brought to you by PocketEmploymentLawyer.ca. Wrongfully dismissed? Changes made to your job? Lowballed on severance? Find out if you have a case before you call a lawyer. Go to PocketEmploymentLawyer.ca.